This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. American newspapers have been relying on Iraqi journalists to do things that most American journalists cannot, like speak to Iraqis in Arabic with a full understanding of their culture. My guest, Huda Ahmed, is an Iraqi journalist who has taken great personal risks to report for American papers. A couple of her Iraqi friends who are also working as journalists were killed. She does not use her last name in her byline and won't use it on the air today because if she disclosed her identity, it could endanger her family. That's how unpopular journalists are now in Iraq. Huda Ahmed started reporting for the Knight Ridder newspaper chain in 2004. She now reports for the McClatchy Company, which bought most of the Knight Ridder papers earlier this year. She's currently in the Boston area, as she's the recipient of this year's Elizabeth Neufer Fellowship at MIT's Center for International Studies. The fellowship is named after the Boston Globe reporter who was killed while covering the war in Iraq. Huda Ahmed, welcome to Fresh Air. My impression is that it's very unsafe for American journalists to be out in the streets in Iraq because they look like Americans, and therefore they're automatic targets. And I wonder if you think that that's true and if it's therefore easier for you to be out in the streets reporting than it is for an American journalist.
It is, in fact. They are actually a target to be on the streets, especially if they are not talking Arabic and they look like Americans. And that's why we feel safe if we, you know, go out with, you know, Arab journalists who are, you know, Arab Americans, because they look like us. And we try to ask them not to talk, you know, when we are, you know, like walking on the street, not to talk in English with us. Like, we pretend we speak with them in Arabic and they only nod, you know, to us, whether they understand what we say or not. But for Iraqis or Iraqi journalists, of course, they prefer to be, you know, alone and do the story, or, you know, try to bring the story or the information to their bureau, and it's much, much safer than being walking with a foreign journalist.
No, we're talking about how it's easier and safer for Iraqi journalists to get into certain areas than it is for American journalists. But at the same time, as far as I know, most of the journalists who've been killed in Iraq have been Iraqi journalists. So apparently you're not really all that safe as Iraqi journalists. Are Iraqi journalists actually being targeted for murder?
Yes, they've been, because the thing is that those who, you know, got targeted, they live, for instance, that he is Shia and he lives in a Sunni neighborhood. So if he works for TV, they will see him on TV, you know, the cameras. So they will see him, you know, talking, for instance, on an Arab or an American TV, or talk on the radio, or also write articles like about the corruption, or, you know, criticizing the militia and or criticizing the government and the situation. So, of course, he will write his full name, you know, and it's not hard for the insurgents to get to them. And that's why we try, like, as kind of protection for us. We don't say, like, in our neighborhood that we are journalists. We hide that. We try to avoid the cameras as much as possible. We try not to write in our full name. And if we write, like, about critical stories or issues that we know what the consequence is going to be, we try not to write our names, and we ask our foreign journalists to do that, not to mention our names. And I think you have seen many of the stories that at the end of the article, they write, you know, we cannot mention the name of the correspondent for security reasons.
So you're willing to give up your byline. You're willing to write an article and not sign it in order to protect yourself.
Because I'm not protecting myself only. I'm protecting my whole family. Because if I'm, you know, if they didn't get me, they might get one of my family. And I don't want to jeopardize the life of my family. I don't care about my life, but they got nothing to do with that. And it is my choice to be a journalist, and I have to be responsible for that.
Does everybody in your family know that you're working as a journalist, or are you trying to protect them from even having that knowledge?
Only my family. My family, meaning my mother, and because my father passed away last January, and my sisters and brothers, but none of my relatives know, none of my neighbors know. And even when, you know, when I work and go back home, I don't tell them anything about any story I wrote or where did I go or where I've been. Because if I tell them what I think or what I heard, you know, and I've been there and it's true or not, they will talk in public. They might talk in front of relatives or friends or neighbors, and they will know for sure that I'm a journalist. And that will be very risky because that means, because I cannot, like, trust anyone of neighbors, even if they were for goodwilling. So I have to be very secretive.
When you go out to talk to people for stories that you're writing, do you find that people are more afraid to talk to you as a reporter now than they were, say, a year or two ago?
Yes. They get now they get more suspicious, skeptical. Like 2 or 3 years ago, they used to voluntarily answer the questions we ask. But now when we ask them, they have to know that we are not, you know, kind of informants from, you know, terrorist groups that are trying to get information from them or stopping them because I have someone, some, you know, gunman waiting for me at the car and I'm trying to kidnap him or rob him. Also, they are getting suspicious because they are afraid that I might write the thing, whatever he's gonna or she gonna say, and I might, you know, convert it or switch it. So I'm gonna, like, say what I think he meant, and
he could be attacked for it.
Yeah, because it's they prefer if it was like a foreign agency, because as long what he said is going to be published here, it's not going to be read in Baghdad, so it is safer for him. But if it was for local newspaper, they don't want to mention his name. Sometimes we ask them for first and second name, not the last name, because the last name is much popular, will be. Mm-hmm. In Baghdad, or, you know, we write their names like Abu Fulan, like after the name of his son or her daughter. And many of them will ask us for copies from our newspaper that what they said is written. And so we had to talk with them a little bit. We have to make them convinced that we are, we have credibility, that we're going to write whatever they say. And we're going to do our best. And some of them get tired of that because they, like, you know, we talk and you write, but nothing happened. Do you think you're going to help us? And we tell them we are only journalists. We are writing what you say. We cannot do anything about it. But, you know, your voice will be heard. Your words will be read. Maybe something will happen. And we do the interviews sometimes on the street, and we do it just like that, you know, fast. And sometimes with our foreign reporters, we have to do it very fast. We have to look that there's no car or some people waiting or, you know, suspicious or, you know, people get crowded around us. So we have to do it very fast and leave.
Do you have to dress differently as a woman now than you did before the invasion of Iraq?
Yes. We do. I have to. In 2003, it was much better. You know, you can dress up what you like, but, you know, conservative, not sleeveless or something, or short skirt. But you can walk, you can, you know, without scarf. You know, in the past 2.5 years, everything changed, became worse. I have to dress up like a long shirt or long blouse that, you know, cover my body, and pants that not tight. I can go out without a scarf, but, you know, I have to pull my hair back. I cannot, like, leave it like this, you know, loose. Or it's better for me to put something on my hair, like, you know, a scarf. I have, if I want to be much more secured, Some areas I cannot go with, you know, pants, so I wear, you know, long skirt, or I wear, you know, the black cloak, the Arabian cloak, with the scarf, if I want to be like them, so they won't, you know, recognize that I'm some from another area.
Why is it? Why do you have to dress more conservatively now? The Constitution was supposed to have protections for women in it.
It's only ink on paper. It's funny that we have this constitution, but it's not working. It's not on the ground. None of the government will rescue me if something happened to me on the street. Do you think that the police will, raise a finger, or the army would raise a finger if someone kidnapped me or a car passed by and kidnapped me? No, they will never do anything. They will never, leave their spot.
Are there extremists in both the Sunni and Shia militias who see themselves as enforcers of, women dressing and behaving, quote, properly?
Yes.
So it's coming from both sides?
Yes, from both sides.
Tell us about one of the stories that you wrote that you had to take a big risk in order to report.
The best stories that I made with my former bureau chief of Baghdad was, her name is Hana Alam. That was in Najaf when in 2004 in summer, when the followers of Muqtada al-Sadr fought with the multinational forces. And it was so hard because it was so dangerous, and both of us insisted that we should go to Najaf to cover the stories there. And we were thinking that we're not getting any good news from there, that we have to be there. And I went there, and it was very, very dangerous because, we were in a war zone. Bullets were, flying over our heads and under our feet, and we had to run, we have to stick to the wall because, we were taken by one of the, Sadr militia, one of the Muqtada Sadr militiamen, because we wanted to go to the shrine.
And this is the shrine where Muqtada al-Sadr's men had,
they've
been
Ali.
Using it, like I say, as a
yes.
headquarters. They'd been
yes, it was used by his men as they were using themselves as human shields, mm-hmm. And they were there. Muqtada was not there, but one of two, three of his aides, his close aides, they were there, in Imam Ali's shrine, because they know the Americans, cannot bomb this place because it's very sacred to the Shia and it will be, tremendous. Anyway, we went there and we had to hide from the snipers, American snipers, and from the Iraqi fighters. And we have to keep running when we cross from each alley to another alley or from block to block. And we are wearing our, abaya, which is the Arab, black cloak, and the veil, and an Arab abaya you have to wear while you go to Najaf. And also we have the flag jacket over us, and it was so hot because it was July, and it was like hell. And we have to be very careful. So when we cross from a block to block, we hear, we feel the bullets are, like flying over our heads every time we cross a block until we reach, the street that we have to cross to get to the shrine. And that was the most, difficult one, the most risky one, because we have to decide either to go back or to cross it. And that was the most dangerous because the snipers from the other side, the Americans, and, they were firing at the Iraqi fighters from the other side. So they were like, and the American snipers, they were on the buildings. So they were clearly to them, to target us.
Did you decide to cross that street or not?
Yes. And I told my bureau chief, Hana Alam, at that moment, we were like, what did we do? And I told, hey, you have to, this is it. We cannot go back because that means we're going to risk ourselves more and we might get killed, or we have to cross it to the safety inside the shrine. So what do you choose? We have to decide right away. So I told him, you know, say Shahada, which is, you know, in Islam, there is no God but Allah, La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah, and, you know, run. And we had to run as they told us, the Muqtada Sadr followers, they said, you have to, you know, sing each one, have to run, you know, in zigzag way, so the Americans won't fire at you. And on our flag jacket, there was, you know, press we wrote. We crossed in zigzag, each one at a time, and we crossed to the shrine. And it was the most scary night at that night, because it was the night that I don't know how many tons that the American plane fighters that drop of bombs all around the shrine. And we thought we're going to die, and, you know, that the shrine going to be bombed. And it was so, so scary night. I thought that, you know, I told Hannah, and we told each other that if any one of us die, I told her, I don't want to get, you know, wounded. If I'm going to be shot, I want it a dead shot. I don't want to be injured or with one arm or, you know, with one leg. That's it. I can't tolerate with that and want to be buried here. And she said the same thing. And thank God we got out safely.
Now that you're in the United States on this fellowship, and you've been watching, like, American TV coverage of Iraq, I'm sure, and reading different American newspapers, I figure. So how does the coverage strike you from the vantage point of reading it and watching it in the United States?
It's so different, you know. When I get this fellowship and I knew that I'm going to have an internship to Boston Globe and New York Times, and the first thing struck me that I'm going to write about Iraq while I'm here, or, you know, international news about the Middle East because I'm there, I'm from there. When I came here, they told me that I'm going to write about national news of, you know, about Boston or in New York Times about New York. So I found it kind of, you know, funny. Like, this is luxurious, you know, work that I'm going to get. Like, oh, so there is no chasing militia or going to risky areas or bombing or anything. Okay, so I don't have to look, you know, both sides and seeing if someone follows me or a car passed by and shoot at me or something. Well, that's good. That's I found it like it's vacation for me. But at the same time, I really, really wanted so much to know how to write about national news of a foreign country, far from my own country, far from my own culture or tradition and all this thing.
So are you confident that when this fellowship is over, you will want to return to Iraq?
Tell the truth, I don't know, but I hope once I get there, it's going to be, you know, a little bit stable and I can write, and I know it's going to be very difficult. I mean, of course, when I get there, I hope no one will know that I was in U.S.
That would be a bad thing for you, right?
Yes, it will be a bad thing.
If the militias found out. Uh-huh.
Yes, because when I left my family, only my family and my friends, my colleagues at the bureau, they know, and my own newspaper, they know that I'm coming to the United States. But none of my neighbors or relatives or close, you know, friends or close cousins, no, never. They don't know that. Me and my family agreed that if someone asked about me, they will know that I'm studying in Jordan or in Cairo, you know, something like that, but not in U.S. So I'm hoping that that Iraq will be much stable, that I can be able to write stories there. And if not, I have to forget about the luxurious life in the U.S. and the peaceful life here, and I have to, you know, adjust my memory, adjust myself to the violence again in Iraq. And be able to write in accurate way, so let the American reader to read it, describe it as much as possible, how it looks like there and the news there, so he can comprehend what's going on there and have some imagination about it.
Well, Huda Ahmed, I wish you good luck, and I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Huda Ahmed is an Iraqi journalist who now reports for the McClatchy chain of newspapers. She's currently at MIT's Center for International Studies, where she's the recipient of the second annual Elizabeth Neufer Fellowship.